Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Hello, and welcome to the Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else podcast. I'm Tiara Costin, along with my colleague, Elizabeth Yost Hammer, and today we are speaking with Dr. Regan Gurung, who is the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He was born and raised in Bombay, India, and received a BA in psychology at Carleton College and a master's and PhD in social personality psychology at the University of Washington. He then spent 3 years at UCLA as a National Institute of Mental Health Research Fellow. He has received numerous local, state, and national grants for his health psychological and social psychological research on cultural differences in stress, social support, smoking cessation, body image, and impression formation. He has published books, including a textbook, and articles in a variety of scholarly journals. He has made over 200 presentations and given workshops nationally and internationally. Dr. Gurung loves to teach, is a dedicated teacher, and has strong interest in enhancing faculty development and student understanding. He has strong interest in teaching and pedagogy and has organized statewide and national teaching conferences. He is the founding co-editor of APA's Journal of SOTL in Psychology. When not helping people stay calm, reading and writing, he enjoys culinary explorations, travel, time with his two children, and avoiding political discussions of any kind. Welcome, Regan, and thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
You're very welcome. It's great to be on.
Yes, thank you, Regan. I'm really looking forward to this conversation today. As you know, I learn so much from you every time I have gotten the opportunity to hear you speak, and I really appreciate you sharing your vast experience and expertise in the scholarship of teaching and learning with us today. So I thought we would start by just a basic question for our listeners who might not know. What is Scholarship of Teaching and Learning, or SOTL, and how did you personally get involved?
Yeah, you know, when I think about the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning, I basically see it as encompassing the theoretical underpinnings of how we learn, and more importantly, the intentional, systematic modifications of pedagogy and assessments of the resulting changes in learning. So you can simplify that to anything to do with teaching and learning, but I really like to focus on those intentional, systematic modifications of teaching, and more importantly, the assessments of whether those modifications have worked. I got my start when at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, there was a campus program that got faculty members together to talk about teaching and learning and actually do the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning. That then led to a system-wide SOTL program where I spent a year working on a project. And that, once I did that, boy, that really got me interested. And there was probably a key factor, which was, as a social psychologist, I started doing research on teaching and learning in my classroom. And one of my first studies really showed me something that really surprised me. And that was the fact that the more students used key terms or flashcards, the worse they did on exams. And that very counterintuitive finding made me really dive into it a lot more. And I've been doing it ever since. And it's been about, 15 to 20 years of doing active research and testing different questions that I've found intriguing.
Thank you.
So you sort of alluded to the value of the scholarship in teaching and learning and engaging in it. So how do you talk to faculty about beginning to engage in SOTL with the time constraints that faculty have? What would you say to especially someone who's just getting started?
Right. You know, I think a lot of people, when I talk about it and even think about it, it seems like, wow, when can I add this to what I already do? And then I like to think about or make people think about, well, what are the things that you do? And if you care about teaching, in many ways, SOTL is just a systematic way of looking at your teaching and your students' learning. So it provides us with a framework to really answer the question, are our students learning? How do we know that they're learning? How do we know that what we're doing is making a difference in their development and cognitive growth? And those seemingly abstract questions can be answered very concretely by following the methodology of the scholarship of teaching and learning. So in terms of where do you fit it in fact, it may actually save you time. And I know this sounds paradoxical, but that's a neat thing. It may actually save you time because it's giving you this structured way of doing something that you already care a lot about. So not only does it help in that way, but I think I've found that especially after years of teaching, by virtue of asking questions about our teaching, by virtue of looking at what's out there to do the scholarship of teaching and learning on, or examining certain questions that we have about our classes, it really serves this invigorating role. So there are, when I think about the value of SOTL, and this is not just my opinion, when you look at the research shows that when faculty do SOTL, their students learn better, they grow personally from a faculty development standpoint, universities and departments do better, and I think correspondingly the entire enterprise of higher education gets pushed along.
Oh, I so agree with that. I think, Tara and I have spoken on numerous occasions. We see something come out in the Chronicle about new things that are happening in STEM, and we're like, we've been doing that at Xavier for a while, or, you know, we faculty have already been experimenting with that, and so it's a matter of kind of really wanting our faculty to engage in this and then get that out there so that we can move the academy forward. I wonder, as we're talking about, you know, trying to enlist faculty into the scholarship of teaching and learning and really, you know, tell them the value and get them engaged. What resources would you recommend for faculty who are just getting started? What's out there for resources for, you know, faculty who just really don't know even how to begin?
Right. I think right off the bat, you and your center is the resource. I mean, anybody who listens
Thanks,
to this,
Regan.
You know, well, it's not. I know you didn't plant that question. I mean, when I think about where can people go, it's talk to the center. And the great individuals at the center. And I know what both of you do. I've had the pleasure of meeting you all and seeing what the center does firsthand. And that's the first place. The moment you go, hey, this sounds intriguing, go to the center. If not, you know, if especially if somebody's listening to this and wants a next step, read the stuff that we've written. And, you know, I've written stuff, Elizabeth, you've written stuff, the center puts out stuff. There's so much good material out there to get you started. I know in the field of psychology, for example, the Society for the Teaching of Psychology holds yearly SOTL workshops. And out of that workshop came a publication that is explicitly designed to help people get started on doing the scholarship of teaching and learning. And it's not surprisingly very aptly called Doing the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning. You know, so I would say, hey, if you're listening to this and you want to get started, take a look at Doing the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning, Measuring Systematic Changes in Teaching and Improvements in Learning. And it's an edited book with multiple chapters spanning every part of the process, ranging from, you know, how you can actually use assessment, designing studies, navigating ethics and the IRB, writing it up, you know, the work. So, I mean, that for me is my go-to great single place to start because it's a slim volume that really puts everything together in one wonderful spot.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't mind, I might mention also the Kennesaw State University, their teaching center maintains a list of publication outlets for scholarship teaching and learning, as well as conferences in all disciplines across the board, as well as interdisciplinary ones and that sort of thing too. So that's a good way to go to get started
Right.
reading in your field, I think.
And, you know, if I could just pick up on the reading, that's the cheap, quick way. I mean, you can turn to your computer, browse for scholarship of teaching learning in your discipline, and if you peruse a couple issues of those journals, that'll really give you some idea of what you can do. I also want to say that when we think about, you know, and going back here to your question about how is this something extra, well, in a way, it shouldn't be, oh, I need to do this research. I think the better we see it as part of evaluating our teaching and learning, the more it becomes a natural part of what we do. And when I think about what makes a model teacher, I think conducting this form of investigation of teaching and learning on a regular basis needs to be part of what faculty do all the time.
Absolutely. And we are going to make sure to our listeners that we have links to those resources that have been mentioned in addition to some other ones, so fear not. I want to move ahead a little bit in this process to actually publishing.
Uh-huh.
So I can tell you here, there is a lot of pedagogical research going on here at Xavier. But we tend to hit a wall when it comes to actually publishing that information and getting it out there in the journals and in the literature. So what would you say, or what advice would you give about pushing, getting over that hump and pushing to get these things, this information published?
Yeah, I would say do it in steps. And I see three normal steps to take that I think always work well. I think step one is find a local forum to even talk about it. So a good part of SOTL is sharing your scholarship of teaching and learning. And the sharing could take place where a faculty member contacts the local center like yours and says, hey, could I get together and share what I found out? That's SOTL. It's sharing what you're doing. You can share it locally. You can share it at a disciplinary conference. You can share it as a poster. You can share it as a presentation. That's a very easy first step, because especially if it's a brown bag, even that counts where you're sharing the idea, but get it out there. Because I think faculty need to realize that if they've had that question about their teaching, there are probably a few thousand others who have the same question who would love to hear what that faculty member did and found. Even if they found something that was not significant, even if they found something that didn't work, even the more reason to share it so somebody else can build on that research and go further. So the steps are presented, you know, as a poster or as a talk, that automatically gives you something that you can then develop into an article and get out. I think a lot of it will also depend on the reward structure at universities. You know, does your department reward it? Does your chair reward it? That varies across disciplines. But really, if you take that step-by-step approach, you have something to build on, and it'll make it more likely that downstream it will get out to an outlet.
Thank you. Before we move off of this, I think about the work you've done and the publishing you've done, and you said you've been doing this for 15 to 20 years. What's been your favorite study that you've done, or the one that you feel has been the most impactful? Like, give the listeners a sample of what actually gets done in total.
Yeah, you know, there are probably a couple that jump out. I'll mention two. One of my earlier ones, one of my most recent ones. The earlier one was, I like to call, dangerous detours, which is the fact that students in large intro classes tend to over-rely on pedagogical aids in a textbook. This is the same study where, actually it's a series of studies where I found that, you know, students are over-relying on boldface terms. They are over-relying on key terms. They spend so much attention on key terms when studying that they're not doing other things. You know, and I refer to that as sort of a dangerous detour that students often take. That's both inspired me to do a lot more work, and I've gotten a lot of feedback on that. On the other end of the spectrum, much more recently, I published a study on open educational resources, and where I did this multi-site study comparing students using an open educational resource with students using a regular textbook. And at least on a common benchmark exam, the students using the open educational resource did not score as high or do as well. And that study, I've been surprised. I mean, I got an email from Australia last week saying, hey, we just talked about this. And I thought, you know, that is pretty neat because I think there are a lot of implications there, a lot of potential with open educational resources, and we need more controlled multi-site work on it. I think the research on that has just really started in earnest. And I mean, I think just this summer there was another study that came out of Atlanta, actually showing that open educational resources not only saved a lot of money, which we would know, but also seemed to actually help student performance. So I know my personal jury is still out because it's very tough to do a well-controlled study. But that's the kind of stuff that I think is really inspiring. Is look at what's happening now. And let's apply these questions, such as, are open educational resources as good as or better than traditional expensive resources? I mean, that's a great question for so many of us with so many implications, especially for our students, many of whom can't afford textbooks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to take you back to something you alluded to just a few moments ago. There are situations where faculty members find themselves in environments that don't necessarily equate SOTO or pedagogical research with disciplinary research. So for those who understand very well the importance of engaging in SOTO, but who are in that kind of environment, any suggestions, any thoughts about how they push past that hurdle to try to move that pendulum in a more positive direction?
Yeah, I would say, you know, find your champion. On every campus, there are different champions of SOTL. That champion may not be in your department, but if you can find those people who do care about it, they can advocate for you and at the very minimum provide that support system for you to continue doing it. Because I think the value of doing it, of doing scholarship of teaching and learning, goes so far beyond just another thing for tenure or for promotion. It is something that can truly provide, I think, inspiration and energy to keep faculty teaching and be excited about teaching. So I would say, for starters, find your champion and find the support system so that you can continue to do it. And I think, you know, those of us on this chat are very fortunate to know people who support it. For some others, it may just take looking around for who's doing it. And sometimes I would say, do not hesitate to reach out to an author of a paper that you've read and make a connection. That works too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely building that community.
Thanks, Regan. I wonder now if you would comment. I think it's really cool to be speaking to you about this because you are the editor of the journal. So I wonder from that, you know, kind of wearing that hat, what do you think the future is of scholarship of teaching and learning?
You know, there are, it's been interesting. You know, the scholarship of teaching and learning in psychology is just a few years old, and it's been really neat to see the increase in submissions. It's been, especially at this journal, we've tried to create new forums for getting more work out there or to see the light of day that may not necessarily have any significant findings, but is heuristically valuable. I think that's one of the key areas scholarship of teaching needs to go is provide formats or venues where you can put forward an exploration that may have failed, but others could still learn from and move towards. I think that's one really big area is we need to find ways not to just publish significant work, but good systematic explorations. I think another area where I see the scholarship of teaching and learning needing to go is really trying to use more of a theoretical approach. There are too many studies that I receive as editor that are just thrown together without the same rigor or thought that a person would give to scholarship in their area. You know, my simple answer to when people say, hey, what are the best tips to write scholarship of teaching up? I say exactly like you'd write up anything else. You know, I hold manuscripts to the same standards as I do when I review for other journals. And I believe that, you know, your writing should be strong, and part of that, and design should be strong. And I think part of that is including more of a theoretical approach to how we do it. And I think for me, those are really two big things, is let's get more theoretical. Let's look at how different factors get together, and that's going to advance us. One last thing is I'm a big champion of multi-site work. I think doing something in one class is great, but, you know, why not contact a colleague at another institution and have them do exactly the same thing, or to serve as a comparison group? That really takes us a lot further in understanding and being able to generalize what we're doing. Now, you know, scholarship of teaching and learning doesn't necessarily have to generalize. It's very different from some other areas in a way. There's a lot of value to doing a study in a classroom, but I think it better helps us understand the processes underlying teaching and learning if we do more of that work.
Absolutely. So, and this is my personal curiosity, I have heard so many times that the reason you don't have sort of the equal level between disciplinary research and social research is because of that lack of the approach by the investigators. Do you, being in this area, see that changing? I greatly appreciate your standard as the editor of the journal, but do you see that changing as a whole, where you are seeing more rigor in terms of, you know, SOTL research?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the benefits of being an old fogey and doing it for about 15 plus years is that I can look back to both not only views of how it was done, but actual examples of how it was done. And there is a marked difference in how SOTL is done today in contrast to how it was done, you know, even 5 years ago for that matter. So that's the great news. It's the standards and the quality has jumped up. And I think that's a function of more people being aware of it, more people giving it more importance, and more departments and schools recognizing faculty who take the time and the effort to do it.
Well, that positive note is an excellent place to end our discussion. Thank you so much, Regan. We have been speaking with Dr. Regan Gurung, the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Thank you for your time.
You are very welcome.
And to our listeners, we also thank you for taking the time to listen to our podcast. If you like what you heard and you want to keep up with our program, please subscribe to the series and by all means rate and review us on iTunes or Google or the platform of your choice. Your feedback really does help us to produce our best program.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else.
For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's C-A-T dot X-U-L-A dot E-D-U.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.